Hey everybody, Future Dave here before the show. This was supposed to be our Nationals preview that would include Randy, however, there was a problem with his file, just to give you a little bit of the behind the scenes into the podcast. Luckily, this is why we keep episodes stockpiled. We had this one ready to go anyway, and we're going to bring it to you now. A little bit of a lighter discussion, hopefully something that you will enjoy as you are driving to Nationals, or just gearing up for your weekend games at your game store of Dice Masters. One way or the other, whatever you're doing, please enjoy. And if you're at Nationals, please, please say hello. We want to hear from you. We want to meet you. That's one of the best parts of doing this kind of stuff. So again, thanks for listening. Thanks for paying attention to us. And we hope to see you there. Let's start the show. The Reserve Pool, Episode 45, Theme Teams. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to The Reserve Pool. This is Episode 45. We are a podcast about Dice Masters and all the people who love to play it. And this is Dave.
And this is Evan.
And we're happy to be here again. We had a pretty big show. This is going to be a lot easier to record this week than those massive D&D set reviews we did the last 2 weeks.
Yep. Oh, man. Well, no more marathons.
Not until DC, at least.
Yeah.
But that was still a lot of fun to do, and surprisingly easy to edit once we kind of got it down to a science in that first one. So, yeah, but let's get back to some lighter stuff. Just board gaming in general, Evan, what are you playing right now?
Well, my group has been playing a few newer games. I got a chance to play, I think it was Courtier?
Oh, is that one of the Tempest games?
Yeah.
The Love Letter line?
It's in the world of Love Letter, but as far as I can tell, has no actual relation to it, aside from maybe the same art and, like, notionally, oh, it's the same princess or something.
Yeah, there were like 5 games in that Tempest series or something like that.
Yeah, and I think, well, Courtier is the one that's out, and I think there's another one coming soon.
Dominaire has also been out for a while.
Really?
Can't remember the others.
That's funny.
Mercante.
Mercante is out? Oh.
Yes.
Wow. I've seen all of these
on the shelves, yeah.
Yeah, well, anyway, it's a lot of fun. You're trying to influence various court people to try and get things passed. It's sort of like trying to curry favor with the queen before she gets arrested.
It's lobbying politics.
Yes, yeah. It's Congress lobbying. It is lobbying the game. And it actually moves really fast. Like, it's a game with a lot of little pieces and tons of cards, and you think it might wind up taking an hour and a half, but no, you'll be done in 45 minutes, even if you haven't really played before.
I hear good things about a lot of those Tempest games. I've only checked out Love Letter, which, if you're listening and you haven't, I recommend it. It's inexpensive, and it's a nice, quick little filler game.
Yeah, I mean, about Love Letter, I don't really like that sort of, like, figure out what your opponent's going to do game normally, but I liked Love Letter. Mostly because I think the space of it is small enough that even if you don't, like, even if you're not good at thinking ahead of 18,000 different possibilities, you can generally narrow down the space given what you've seen. Like, it's a small enough space that you can card count properly, unless you're really, really good at card counting.
Well, which is really
the
point of
that game. Fairly practiced at card counting, yeah.
Is to be able to do that kind of stuff, but then they mix it up by having the hidden cards.
Right.
Yeah. Well, that's cool. We just picked up Tragedy Looper, which is a game that came out at Gen Con last year from Z-Man Games, and I can't remember the name of the designer. It's something interesting, like Baka Fire or something like that. I'd have to look at the box. But it has this. It's a very anime art style, which I know some people hate, some people really like. I'm fine with it. I have no issue one way or the other. But the idea of Tragedy Looper is that it's a one-versus-many game for up to 4 players. You can influence time. So there is the mastermind and the protagonists. And the protagonists are trying to prevent some kind of tragedy from occurring. It could be like a murder mystery plot or something like that. And there are complex, like, facets to each plot. And the mastermind is trying to, you know, make this thing happen. So you're moving things around from location to location, playing different kinds of traits on people like paranoia and other stuff like that. Mastermind, again, trying to make the tragedy happen, and the protagonist trying to, like, step very carefully so that they don't trigger it. Well, that first time through the loop, they're probably going to trigger it. It just should happen. They're going to trigger it. Somebody's dead or whatever happens, and so you stop, and now you go back basically to the beginning. You start the time loop over again, and now the protagonists are trying to figure out what is it that is going on here, and how can we stop it? Just a really interesting game. Definitely takes a lot to wrap your head around, but fascinating, fascinating game. Interesting kind of deduction. It has some similarity to Letters from Whitechapel in the sense of what it is that you're doing, but the way that it acts out is completely different. Just fascinating game, and I'm very happy that we spotted it at the game store and picked it up.
Yeah, I mean, if it's like, if you say it's similar to Letters from Whitechapel, that makes me want to see about giving it a try, just because the time I played Letters of Whitechapel, that was seriously some of the tensest gaming I've had in the last year or so.
Oh, I love that game. Yeah. Well, I will certainly bring Tragedy Looper, and actually, why not? I'll bring Letters from Whitechapel to a little thing that we're going
to in a week.
Yeah. I think that might be cool.
Absolutely. So let's talk about some Dice Masters. First off, Evan, we just did the D&D set review. Let me say this first. D&D is fun.
Yeah. I mean, I kind of hope they wind up doing some block, like some of the sort of like magic-esque block things where they say, okay, you know, here's, you know, at this point, these sets will go out of play. And I'm like, when will that happen to UXM? So then we can have these nice long games without worrying about certain global speeding up everything.
Yeah, see, it's there, so I will use it. I had an email exchange with somebody, and they like the... and I'm not going to talk about who, because it was a private email exchange. But they mentioned that they really appreciated the debate that brought. But they're a bit of a spike, so they don't want to step into that. I don't know. I feel like I play as a nuts and bolts spike. That's why I go to limited formats. That's what draws me to them, because it's more about like your technical play and things like that. If it's there, I'm going to use it. I'm going to make decks that abuse it, and I'm going to try to win with it. That doesn't mean that I like that it's there.
Yeah. I mean, I can appreciate, because there is finesse involved in using the Professor X Global. It's not just like, you know, push button, receive bacon. It's... You know, you have to use it at the right time and in the right amounts, and you have to sort of plan your energy ahead. So it's not just, you know, it is not the I win button. It's just, I don't like that you have to account for it. Many decks rely on it, and it's really pushed us towards and you win in four turns game setting, so you can't have the more, you know, the more andante pace of what I think the game should be.
Yeah, with a little more of a long-term strategy and trying to let things develop. I like that it makes things purchasable just a little sooner than they were. That's a help. But yeah, the unintended consequence of that was that it made four crossed characters, monsters, what have you, a sweet spot, where if you go with a two cost and go with a four cost, you can then be rolling every single die in your bag by your third turn. And right. I think that it bypasses the whole fact of the blind draw of, like, some of the what are you going to get here and having to adapt, some of the tactical nature of this game. It bypasses a lot of that, because from any turns on end, you can be rolling all of your dice.
Right. And, yeah, it's not just the, oh, and it speeds up your game. Oh, and you also get to control your bag perfectly for, you know, if you play correctly, you get to control your bag perfectly for the rest of the game. I think you should get one or the other.
Yes. I had an article drop this last Sunday about hidden information. It was sort of like a what-if fun variant kind of idea. But the one piece of hidden information that we have in this game, or of not perfect information, right? Because I know what my opponent brought. I know what globals are available. I know what dice they've bought. I know everything. But I don't know what I'm going to draw from my bag. That's the only piece of information that we don't know. We don't know what our dice are going to come up as when we roll them. But in general, that's the one that's what we don't know. I think that I think that to take that away is just, it just does the game a bit of a disservice. So I like purchasing things faster, and I don't think Professor X needs to go away. I think it just needs to be changed.
Yeah,
but that
limited,
said, I won't.
I think limiting it to once a turn would probably fix a lot of the issues with it.
I think it probably would. There was a comment on the article, and I can't remember who. I think it was the quote-unquote other Dave.
Oh, no.
Who comments on our articles from time to time. He's a good guy. He has a good head for strategy. Let me see here. If it was once per turn, you could still be rolling 4 turn 1, 6 turn 2, 8 turn 3, and 6 on turn 4. Is what he worked out. If it was once during your turn, it would be 4, 4, 6, 4, 6. And that's sort of a best case scenario. I still think the 8 on turn 3 would be a little bit more difficult. You might be limiting some of the ways that you're buying things, but
right.
I think just once per turn absolutely makes it workable. While you still get to roll a lot of dice and you still get to buy some things, it still allows for some more variance, which is what the power takes away.
Right.
So, man, I said this was going to be lighter. What are we doing? D&D is fun, Evan. It is awesome. And actually, one of the things, let's segue off of Professor X. One of the things we're going to have to talk about coming forward with D&D and moving into DC after that, and really looking back at Yu-Gi-Oh, which is an ignored aspect of that set too, is the use of globals, of new globals. Like, it's not churn. It's more like buy one, get one. It's cost fixing. It's
right.
It's a blue light special.
Yeah, the stuff like the Red Dragon active, or I guess sort of if you want to consider it that way, the Resurrection Global.
Sure.
Where it's pay now to get later, or sometimes pay later to get now.
Or just when this is in the field, your actions cost less, or like the Elf Wizard.
Or
when this is in the field, things cost one less to field. And there's another one, is it Dracolich or Dracolich that I think makes mass characters cheaper to purchase? I'm sorry?
Mummy, I think it was the common mummy.
I think you're right, it is mummy, makes masks cheaper, and Half Dragon, of course, makes dragons cheaper. Blue Eyes, White Dragon, you pay a bolt and knock out a character and you get, you know, $2 off your next purchase.
Right.
All those sorts of things. We're going to
have
to talk about
that. Don't forget Pit Fiend, making Pit Fiends cheaper.
Yeah, the most useful one of all. Thank you for saving that for last. I can't wait till we have more fiends.
I'm hoping they do. They're not gonna, but no. It would be awesome if they did the Blood War as an upcoming expansion, but that's Planescape, and we will probably never see anything solely devoted to Planescape again.
I would like to see something solely devoted to Dragonlance. A Dragonlance Dice Master set would be great, and if they don't do it, I'm going to get into Photoshop and make one. But it's still D&D. It's much my favorite setting. But yeah, I love playing with this set. I love just looking through the cards. This is like my most fun, my favorite set to just look through. It just makes me happy.
Yeah, I mean,
it's awesome.
The art for the D&D books is very good overall.
Yeah, absolutely it is. And so a little bit ago then, Evan, we alluded to an event we were going to, and Randy will be joining us as well because the three of us are heading to Nationals down in Baltimore, which should be awesome.
That'll actually be just over a week after this episode hits.
I know, that's crazy. Future Dave here. It's actually tomorrow. Oh my goodness. All right, let's go back in. And then we'll try and get a whole bunch of stuff going at the event too. But
if we can do a D&D draft, we're going to do a D&D draft.
Yeah. I'm hoping that there's DC stuff
draftable. I would be
there.
Surprised
there
if there
stuff
wasn't.
Available. Yeah.
I think that's going to be their main draft.
They made UXM stuff available before Street at the WizKids Opens. So I'm hoping that DC is available for starter sets and drafts, if not like a whole bunch of stuff. I know that a lot of the participation rewards are DC related, and that'll be cool. I'm thrilled to jump into this set.
First prize is, in fact, a complete Factory DC set.
That's true. That's true. Oh, man. So I guess I shouldn't buy anything until I find out if I win the whole tournament. But I'm really excited. Now, Evan, I don't know if you saw this. This was going to be played at, Games and Stuff. I guess they have a big competition hall there. I've never been down there. It's Baltimore.
Right. But now it's too big, and they have to put it. They had to move it.
Yeah, there's like a mall or something. And I assume it's not just like a mall. I assume there's some big stuff there that they're using, or maybe they converted an empty big box department store into something else. But I don't care. We're going to be down there with other gamers, and that should be fun. It's still in the same generic area as it was before. So, you know, we were talking a little bit offline, though. What's the turnout going to be like? You had seen some stats, I guess, Evan, that the Northeast is a little bit of a gaming black hole in some ways.
Yeah. Yeah, they've been, I think, an infographic showing, and this is not to say anyone who's in the Northeast, oh man, none of you game, what are you doing?
Well, you're in the Northeast, we're not talking bad of you or anything like that.
Right, I think it's sort of a combination of various factors. I think one of them might be just, it's really expensive to do conventions in the Northeast. I mean, even Baltimore is like sort of the south end of the Northeast. Mm-hmm. And I think it's just it's so expensive to get space to do a convention. It feels like there's less conventions and less sort of an impetus to get the scene going.
Yeah, the only ones I can think of off the top of my head are, and I'm sure there are others, and I know somebody will email and say, hey, there's this giant con that you didn't know about. I hear about TotalCon, and I hear about SnowCon, but I hear about TotalCon because of Dice Tower and Eric Summerer. I hear about SnowCon because of the gents on Flip the Table. And that's about it.
Yeah, I mean, I know of a few in my area, but not a ton. And
yeah,
I do feel like they're, you know, there's nothing like, I mean, aside from obviously New York Comic Con.
Right.
And PAX East, I suppose.
PAX East is a big one, yeah, but that's not strictly tabletop gaming. That's a lot of things.
No.
Certainly a lot of things. Well, you know, it's true, because then you go towards the Midwest, which around Pittsburgh, we're just sort of on the cusp of Midwest. We're Appalachia, but we're culturally Midwest, but we're sort of mid-Atlantic. We're a little bit of everything here. But, you know, Columbus, not that far away with Origins, of course, and then you go over to Indianapolis, and you have Gen Con. You go over
at
to
least
St.
for
Louis,
now.
And you have, well, for now, yeah.
They're staying there. They're looking to move it now.
Yeah, well.
And with that, we don't want to get too political in here.
That's a whole other subject that I don't want to delve into here.
Yeah.
And also the, what's the one, the big one in St. Louis, the gateway to the geek way. I don't remember what they call it. It's a big one, and I just don't know the name.
Yeah, me neither.
And, of course, Fantasy Flight is based in Minnesota.
Yep.
And everything like that. So, I think the Midwest is a more
European
kind of thing. A lot more European influences. I'm just making this up. A lot more European influences, so we all latch on to these Euro games a little bit more. That's my excuse. It's probably baseless.
I remember seeing reasoning for it, and I can't remember it. So,
all right. Well,
chalk up another one for my cruddy memory.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's say we do something we haven't done in a couple of weeks. Let's answer some mail.
Oh, no.
Send us some messages, and we let a few things back up here and there, so we picked out some good ones from the last several weeks while we were busy reviewing all those D&D cards. So the first one we have is from Mark, and Mark has two questions. In fact, he says, "Hi, Dave, love the podcast. I have two questions, so let's get to them. One, if I have unused energy during my opponent's attack step, and he or she does not attack, can I still use globals, or do I lose the chance since they ended their turn?" Well, let's pause there and answer this one, because I think this is an important thing from an etiquette standpoint, not just like a timing in the game.
Yeah.
So technically, if they don't attack, if they say, okay, I don't attack, I'm done. Yeah, the window is technically closed. However, before the main step is over, if your opponent is done doing what they're doing, the person who's the active player gets to do all kinds of stuff, whatever they want to do. And then when they're done, the opponent gets the opportunity to play something. That's when priority is passed to them. So if they're at the end of their main step and they're done doing things,
they should be telling you.
They should say, I am done currently with my main step. Are you going to play anything? If they say, I don't attack, I'm done. I think you should still have the opportunity to play abilities, even though technically they've bypassed the attack ship at that point. Because right. one, if they didn't give you the chance, they're just being mean. Two, what they actually just did is give you information that they're not planning on attacking. So you could maybe do something with that, force something to attack into something of yours, or who knows what else. But yeah, that's the first one is, yeah.
Technically,
at the end of your main
no.
step, yeah.
Technically, no, but realistically, and if I were a judge judging this,
I
would say
in
yes.
a casual game, if they say, oh, I'm not attacking. Oh, wait, hey, I wanted to do this. Okay, no problem. In a tournament environment, I mean, you really just got to do your opponent the courtesy of saying, all right, I'm currently done with my plays. Are you going to respond in any way? And if they're not, okay, you can still do more, I guess, but...
Yeah, you know. I mean, if like I said, if I were judging and you came to me saying my opponent just said I'm done and then said I couldn't use any globals, I would say, did they say I'm done with my main step? If they say no, then I'd say, well, they never informed you, you should be able to go. If they did and you didn't take advantage of it and then they said they were attacking, then it's tough on you.
Yeah. Yep, that's pretty much the way it goes. Now, the second question here is a good one, and I'm going to have to dig into this a little bit. If I use Spider-Man, he says Spider-Bomb, in quotes, is the name of the card. I believe that one's Wallcrawler.
Yeah.
I pay the two fists to change my opponent's life to 10. Can I then distract him, since he won't be able to use his attack now anyway, since the new ruling? So I believe the way the errata reads is that basically the changing to 10 life replaces the attack, and then he would go to use in normal. So I would think that if the 10 life change is happening, just intuitively,
yeah.
Okay, from a logical standpoint, do you still have, like, okay, so that would happen as soon as he's not blocked, the 10 life happens, and then there's the ability to play actions and globals. But I would say that he shouldn't be an eligible target because his ability fired. But then again, that would be counter to how the rules work for other things.
Yeah, I mean, it feels like since they wanted to make this replace dealing damage, it probably should prevent, like, if you were to distract him after paying the two, or you wouldn't be allowed to, but I think technically this is legal.
Yeah. Oh, and here's the other thing. The way they said it, Spider-Man could use his ability at the same time as a when blocked ability, and then would go to the used pile. I don't even know that he stays in the field, like, during the...
That's
I think he
point.
Might leave the field after the declare blocker step and the blocker abilities fire once that point ends.
Yeah, or maybe just when the two fists are used.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. Leather of the Law, the way they say it, he could use his ability at the same time as a when blocked ability and then would go to the used pile. So I would say he wouldn't even be in the field for you to distract.
Right. He's just, once he does his damage, either through actual punching or his magic punching, he's done. He goes to the used pile.
Yep.
So,
all right.
That's
that's
our ruling. Or that's what we think, and that's what
that's
we're sticking
our interpretation.
With. Yeah.
Absolutely. I'm curious to see, because I guess that could come up at Nationals. I wonder how that will be ruled.
Yeah.
Hopefully, it's ruled in a specific way before a game that I'm involved in. But we will see.
Yeah.
Thank you, Mark. Evan, what else do we have?
We have Dan dropping us a line. He says, hello, I'm just getting into Dice Masters and have just discovered your podcast. I'm interested in listening to it from the beginning, but the iTunes feed only has episodes 15 to current. I can only listen to episode 1 on your site. Episodes 2 to 14 seem to be unavailable. I may have missed an explanation somewhere on the site, but I just thought I would check with you. Are these episodes available anywhere, or should I just start with episode 15? Thanks.
Unfortunately, those episodes were lost. It was a little glitch and so forth. I've mentioned this before in private to other people. So, yeah, those episodes were lost. I do not have the files anymore. If somebody subscribes to us in iTunes on their computer and they have the automatic downloads and they haven't deleted them, if you would like to, like, package those up in Dropbox or Google Drive or something like that and send us a link, fantastic. We'd love to make those available for people, but right now those don't exist. In some ways that's not a huge problem, because a lot of the earlier meta-based stuff just doesn't apply anymore.
Yeah.
But there was also some basic strategy things that we did in those, just like some of our earliest articles that are still just as applicable today as they were back then, that it's a shame. Like, episode 2 was Churn. I mean, Churn was very different back at the beginning of the game than it is now, even just under a year later. But, yeah, so unfortunately those are gone. But if somebody has those, let us know.
I might be able to see about that.
Oh, I guess I should talk to everybody a little more about this.
I think Katie might have them.
Ooh. Katie comes through
for us. Or Katie or a friend of hers. I don't know. I'll have to see. I'm not entirely sure about that, but there's a chance.
Fair enough. Fair enough. Thanks for writing in, Dan. Tim writes in. He says, hey, guys, I live in Rochester. There's a vibrant Magic, Yu-Gi-Oh!, and even Vanguard community, but Dice Masters is having a hard time catching on for at least tournament play. Last weekend, we had a turnout of 4 people, but the event got canceled because there was 180 people there to play Yu-Gi-Oh! Obviously, there are enough people in the area to fill an event. I asked the owners of the card shop, and they told me they have products sell out continuously, but I don't see those players around when it comes to event time. Do you know how I can make the tournament seem less intimidating to the kitchen table players? P.S. How many of you guys are at the reserve pool going to the WizKids Nationals? I was considering it, but so far it's just me that's interested. Three of us are going there, Tim. But let's address his bigger question. The first thing I'll say before I defer to you, Evan, is check out some of the segments that Chris has been putting in, because I think that it's good advice in general for people building a scene. But let's talk specific to you.
Yeah, I mean, I've been kind of facing this too. It's gotten a little better because I've actually found some people who do play. But I was in the same situation for a very long time, where I'd go into stores who would carry Dice Masters product, and they were like, yeah, we're selling it like hotcakes. And I'm like, do any of these people play, or are they eating the dice or something? I don't know, because I never hear anyone actually around to play. And it took a really long time before I sort of found enough people who are like, yeah, I want to play this. And part of it was, I think some of the people had like tried it and were a little skeptical of the collectible aspect, but
sure.
It took so they didn't kind of want to buy in more. But really, I think the big thing to do is persistence. Like, find nights where you can, you know, shout on the corner who wants to try some Dice Masters. Peddle the game. Get the addiction started. And if they have like a billboard or something in the shop, you know,
a
bulletin board or something, consider putting stuff up. Heck, ask them if they wouldn't mind like putting up an ad or something for, you know, let's meet on Wednesdays and play Dice Masters on the actual gravity feeds. If they'd be down with that, you know.
Yeah. Those are all great ideas.
I mean, you're helping to build community and helping to help them sell products. So I don't see why they should say no unless, you know, there's no room for you to put in a message. So I think really a lot of it, it took me like 2 months before I actually finally started getting stuff going.
Yeah. Use the store's Facebook page, post up there. I mean, if these people are frequenting the store enough to buy the product, then great, do it. I mean, you know, I've seen the same thing here.
Check out Meetup too.
Is possible. I've left my email like, hey, as you see people buying this, give them my email. Here it is. Let them reach out to me. I don't care. Some people are a little apprehensive about doing that, but others will reach out to you. Just make it known that you are around and that you like this game and you want to get a scene going. But I would also say don't discount the allure of open play and demo days.
Yeah.
I mean, just make sure that the game is available to play. That more people are going to see it that way anyway, and more people will buy it anyway. But then that could get some of those kitchen table players into the store because they know it's just going to be something casual. But then as you play, as you talk, you build your scene, it becomes something more. And the other thing I would say, especially if you're somebody who's sort of the Dice Masters evangelist in your area, don't pay too much attention to what the meta's doing on a national level.
Yeah.
I think I see a lot of people do this at Netrunner, too. Don't pay too much attention to what everything is doing. Don't pay too much attention to all of those things that are going on. Let your scene grow the way that it's going to grow. I mean, it's possible that somebody will really get into it and read up a whole bunch of stuff and then come on with the latest, greatest, you know, shiny team. But let it grow organically. You know, there's a shop near me where the people who have played Netrunner all learn from this one guy, and he doesn't really read a whole ton of this stuff you know, on the internet about it. They just kind of play and let it grow organically and discover things on their own. And, man, that's a lot of fun. I mean, it really, really is. It's something that I'm not of the mindset to be able to step aside and do that because it's just not how I play these games. But let it grow, and that's also going to make things a little more approachable. I mean, if your kitchen table players come and at the first thing, game one, you're playing Swiss, and game one they lose to Gabi Serena, and game two they lose to, you know, Spider Bomb, and, you know, game three Flying Sidekick cleans their clock, they're never going to come back. So make it a welcoming environment. Get some casual play going and get a lot of it. Don't underestimate how much of that it takes before you can really turn the corner into tournaments if it's a new scene.
Yep. And I think the other thing is keep talking with the people at the with the people who like are at the store and running stuff. If they get to know you, then when people come in to buy stuff, they'll remember you and they'll mention, hey, yeah, but we have this guy who's, you know, getting stuff together for this. He shows up usually on Tuesdays and Thursdays to play. So, you know, if you're interested in giving this a try with people, come down. You'll get people started. You will have people show up. It's totally what happened with us.
The lead sales guy at the store, one of the stores that's closest to me, I taught him how to play the game, and he's somebody who really liked Quarriors. I mentioned this a few weeks ago. He's like, well, I had high expectations for this because I love Quarriors, and this just exceeded all of them. And we played a little demo game. And so, again, another thing where I left my information there. Another thing that we've worked up that we'll have to share soon, I have a PDF document that's a very basic like overview of the game. How do I play it in very simple terms? Like, it's just, what am I doing? How do I do it? What do I use to do it? And why is it awesome? And it's just a one page. I put the Dice Masters logo on top just so it's eye-catching. And it really just condenses things. And then you can also like kind of use this as a guide to show like what's the life cycle of a die going around the board. It's just those resources make it really easy when you have newer players involved. So I would say any and all of those things are great ones. And, of course, keep listening to Chris as well.
Yeah. Just to reiterate, the big thing is persistence.
Yeah. Cool. So thank you for writing in. I hope those ideas help.
Okay. For our final letter, for our final mailbag piece, we have Lars, who's won a few of the contests from PES. And we haven't forgotten about the contests. They will come back. They will be back soon, actually. So
we have a lot of new sets and like nationals to prepare for and all that.
So I'm hopefully you'll see it out following this episode within a few days. I'll get that together.
Oh, great. Future Dave here once more. He did get it together. Check out the site for details, but we do have a contest going on right now.
Because I do have the cards for it, and this will be the AVX. My goodness, that's old. The AVX wrap-up.
Ooh, very good.
Well, Lars writes in, and I'm going to paraphrase as their letter was a little bit on the long side, which isn't bad. Please feel free to write us long letters, but we'll just condense it so we're not talking forever. Well, more so than we already do, but... Right. Lars writes in saying they really appreciate what we're doing for the Dice Masters community, and thank you for that. And they note that we talk a lot about good or bad cards, what to do, what not to do, and they sort of disagree. So Lars is saying we talk a lot about strategy and that they prefer to primarily focus on sort of theme and make decks, teams based on what the theme, like, you know, who fits together in the comics, in a game mechanic sense. And because of that, they're a little less up on, like, playing sealed because it's kind of hard to get a theme together. And sometimes just sort of the, you know, you should use this, you know, make sure to use this Yu-Gi-Oh character and this X-Men and, you know, a kobold and, you know, two rabbits and a hat, and just this this deck that's, you know, if you look at...
He didn't write this, guys. This is Evan's
interpretation. This is totally me talking.
Two rabbits and a hat was not from Lars.
Yeah. But you know, the equivalent of, you know, what your five-year, or like a five-year-old little kid might be seeing, it's like, I'm going to have Darth Vader and, you know, a cowboy, and they're going to fight, you know, Lex Luthor.
Wow. And I guess some of our teams do get to be that, yeah. And now I feel bad. I feel like a five-year-old.
But, you know, and they prefer that sort of thing, and we don't really focus on that. And I think in part, it's, and just to answer this, and I definitely feel like, yeah, you know, this is fair, and I think we're actually going to address that a little today. But, you know, I think it's a fair thing that, you know, sometimes when you're looking to just win, you know, if you're looking to really win, sometimes things fall by the wayside a little. And it's sort of unfortunate because there's a lot of times, I mean, when I first started playing Magic and I was really just playing casually with my friends, I was just like all about the Thalid decks because it just amused me to have like, oh yeah, and I have like 40 creatures out and they're all making more creatures every turn.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, not good decks. You know, decks with
hope,
yeah, but fun decks that had a theme to them and that I enjoyed. And I didn't really care about the strategy. And that's perfectly okay to play that.
Oh, well, yeah, I agree. I mean, frankly, we try to do a mix of that. Now, to put this in some context, he sent this email after we had done Quadrant Theory, Role Assignment, and Results Oriented Thinking. So we had about a month there where we did some pretty meaty strategy, like kind of like level up, make yourself a better player episodes. Now, right after that, I said, hey, guess what? We're doing top 10 commons next. So we got you covered, man. And everything like that. But I wanted to put this on because it is something that's valid. A lot of us play this and we want to win and we like to win. But I also have just as much fun, you know, on a more casual sense, just putting crazy things together to see if they work. Whether it's a theme that's like superheroes or if it's a theme like these are all the same kind of monsters, so let's do that. Or like these all use the same energy type, so let's do that.
Yeah. And I'll be honest, oftentimes I sort of despair a little because it's like, well, if I like I'm looking at planning a team for Nationals, I'm like, man, if I'm going to do this, I have to take the stupid Professor X Global. And I have to do all these other things, and all I want to do is have a deck where I'm wishing on kobolds. Like, I'm using kobold energy to wish for dragons, and that's all I want to do. But I know it's not going to win, or it's not necessarily going to win, or going to be as likely to win as anything else, so I'm like, but if I want to win Nationals, I can't do that, and I always feel a little bad about that one. You know, sometimes because of the meta, I feel railroaded into it. So I applaud you for rising over that, Lars.
No, I agree with that sentiment. You know, you can't be everything for everybody. But that said, I definitely get some of the same kind of enjoyment out of those things. Not in the same way as I do playing Sealed, especially for me, is the big one. Well, not or limited formats in general, not just Sealed, but like, you know, Draft as well, of course. But I still do enjoy it. And that's why we do throw those episodes in every now and again. Like, I go back to podcast 17. It was top 10 thematic cards. Or, you know, the stuff where we're talking about our favorite commons. Or, you know, guiding new players and different things like that. Or the themes, the episode we did with all of the themes, the most thematic Uncanny X-Men cards. And we'll certainly have to do that for D&D. We couldn't do that for Yu-Gi-Oh! Because we didn't have enough knowledge.
Yeah. But I can't really comment. I'd be like, yes, these are certainly characters.
Yes, exactly. So those episodes are not going to go away. So do not worry. We want to do both because we enjoy both. We do say this podcast is about the people who love to play it. So it is far more than just, you know, who's the beatdown, like in podcast 39, Know Your Role. Though I think other things are applicable just to, like, life. Like, results-oriented thinking, if you can go through life and focus on, I'm going to make the process of whatever it is that I'm doing at work or with this game or with whatever, like, just absolutely the best that I can, that it might... Things just aren't always going to work out the way that you want them to in the end, but you have, if you can recognize, you know, was that a product of the process that I used, or was that just how the chips fell this time, then you can, you lead a happier life in general. So, I mean, I don't want to say that we're like the self-help podcast all of a sudden or anything but like that, but some of the strategy topics just go, just transcend,
transcend gaming
and go into life and things like that. And, you know, the best managers that I ever had, the best folks I ever worked for, cared more about process. My new boss and my new job cares more about process and wants to make sure that we are doing the things that we are supposed to be doing. Sometimes the results aren't going to be there, but if you can speak to what you did, then everything's a lot better than just, eh, screw it, not doing it.
Or just, so, you know, you got to get this done, you got to get this done, you got to get it done, you got to get this done. Which,
yeah, so
fun.
Those kinds of fun, the top 10 episodes and things like that, or episodes like today where we're talking about thematic teams, absolutely stuff that we're going to keep on doing. But the other side of that contract is that we are going to do things like quadrant theory and role assignment, because working those things out amongst ourselves, talking about it and prepping for those episodes makes us better players. I mean, considering quadrant theory especially just made me think about card evaluation a whole different way, and it helps me be a better player. And then hopefully by us discussing it, it helps all of you be a better player in whatever capacity you want to do it. Because maybe, you know, you want to put that thematic team together, but it comes down to, do I want to take the common the common Wolverine or the uncommon Wolverine, and why would I want to take it? You know, what's going to actually fit better into this team and why? Because you can have thematic teams that are still fun to play. Some thematic teams are just going to be a chore to get through because nothing synergizes at all. So, but let's talk a little bit about that right now. So, yeah, our feature topic, thematic teams. How about that? Who would have thought?
Yeah. We didn't say that so, like four times in the last few minutes at all.
No, not at all. Well, then we had the theme song in there, right? So that breaks it up. That makes it okay. Thematic teams are a big part of the fun of this game. And it becomes even more fun the more sets that come out. Because while we can take that 5-year-old approach, like you talked about, Evan, we're like, ooh, let's take Darth Vader and a cowboy and Captain Kirk.
But that is a theme. It's like, no theme is a theme, I suppose.
Well, yeah. Well, so themes to me, and I'd like to hear your thoughts too. Themes to me are like, one, I'm going to put together the Avengers the best way that I can, or the X-Men, or the Fantastic Three.
Yeah.
Or they are also,
Rip, Sue Storm.
I'm going to put all of these dragons together.
I mean,
or
ultimate,
I'm going to put magicians together. So here I go with Dark Magician Girl, Zatanna, the Elf Wizard, and Time Wizard, and who knows whatever
Doctor
else,
Strange.
Right? Like that, though, yeah, there we go. Yeah, I forgot. How could I forget Doctor Strange? Like that kind of stuff is thematic to me as well, because I'm building them around that central theme of, here's what these guys
really
do.
I mean, really, I think when it comes down to it, any deck, any theme can be thematic. You just have to come up with a story for them. I mean, if you want to, if you try, you can make these, you know, the 5-year-old character salad teams, you know. Well, Iceman and Ant-Man were going to a bachelor party and met, you know, I don't even want to think about, I'm not going to continue that thread because I'm sure it will go to horrible places, but, you know, you can make stories as to why these characters sort of meet up and are working together, because honestly, the random team-up is certainly a thing in superheroes, maybe a little less with D&D, but, you know, dragons work for mysterious purposes, so.
That's true. Well, and of course, there's been plenty of fiction out there. I don't mean fan fiction. I mean actual stuff that was a crossover between Star Trek and the X-Men, Star Trek TNG and the X-Men. So actually, I really hope that WizKids uses the Star Trek license for this game. I believe Lord of the Rings is something that's going to happen down the road. I'm not 100% sure, but I believe I've seen art as to that. It could have been Photoshopped, but it wouldn't shock me because that's a license they have access to. But So, you know, those things do happen all the time. You're absolutely right.
So, you know, you could sort of justify that. But most of the time, I think it's really like you have a story for your deck. Or you see a card and it sparks a story and you go from there. You know, in my case, it's Kobolds and Limited Wish. You have Kobolds and they're wishing for dragons because that's what they want. Kobolds want dragons. Proven fact.
Well, it is. I mean, well, you see that all over the place. That certainly makes sense. And kobolds are so cheap. And if you can find a way to get swarm happening and maybe throw something else in there, like the red dragon
and the elf wizard.
It makes actions cheaper.
And the elf wizard.
The elf wizard, of course.
You know, kobolds need...
So the kobolds kidnapped the elf wizard so that she could like use her magic to cast these limited wishes.
For dragons. Yeah.
I like it already. That's wonderful. Yeah, and that's the stuff that makes a fun theme team for me. I mean, part of it is figuring out why are these things working together, though. I suppose if it's something a little more out there, like not just within D&D, if I said, like, my magician's team with Zatanna and Doctor Strange and the Time Wizard and the Elf Wizard and all those sorts of things and the Dark Magician Girl, like, the only generic thing I can come up with is something's happening in the multiverse that the threads of magic are tearing things apart, so all of them have united to, you know, do
blame Dr. Fate.
There we go, Dr. Fate, or Mr. Mind.
Sure.
Who tried to eat the entire multiverse in 52. But in any case, I can't always think of a story. I mean, what makes a fun theme team for me is something more like just fitting all of these disparate characters together in a way that makes sense for the abilities that they have. Like, I have all of these dragons. I'm going to put them together like Randy just did. I'm going to put them together, and it's going to be fun to play too. I have all these magicians or whatever else. So, I mean, it's not just inset. It's cross-set for me, and I'm not always going to have a story, but I'm just more concerned with the awesomeness of the fact that I might have Doctor Strange standing beside my elf wizard, standing beside Zatanna, and they're all just, like, shooting magic out at everybody.
Yeah. No, I mean, that's not necessarily a story about why they're there, but sometimes just a story about how they play is also good. Because, I mean...
Well, that's a good point. I mean, with the cost fixing that you have on actions... I mean, now we're going to get a little more strategic here. But with the cost fixing you have on actions, and then the Doctor Strange, right, already using the magic machine gun, you know, it's just something a little more that you can do. Actually, that could be a really good team. But see, I don't want to get into that side of it right now. I think it's just fun to put it all together, and they could also work well, too.
And that, I think, is when I get the biggest kick. It's not just, oh, there's this thematic team, but then, you know, and it works.
Yeah. So, Evan, like, what was the genesis of... Well, I guess I can guess at the genesis of the Kobold team, right? Because you see it time and again. Here are Kobolds. They're doing stuff with... They're, like, worshipping dragons, basically. Right. That's just what happens. But, what's your approach when... Do you see a specific card that everybody's like, this is useless? You're like, ooh, I'm going to make it work. Or, do you take an in-universe idea, are you going to put together all of the Zentarum, for example, in D&D?
Yeah, I mean, or, you know? Sometimes it's one, sometimes it's the other. With that, it was just... I looked at Limited Wish, and I was like, man, Limited Wish is such a cool concept, and the rare is so thematic, but none of these are really that... great, but wait, maybe I could use the common one to buy, you know. I think really, and I hate to bring this up because it seems like it's all I say, but I was thinking it would be awesome if I had tools I could use to get big characters out without relying on the Professor X Global. And then I thought about, wait, but if I have an elf wizard and I use the Red Dragon Global, I could buy a Limited Wish to 3, and you know, that means I could buy early limited wishes and have, like, early dragons out. And then it sort of, that's, it sort of was, and then I'm...
Snowballed from there.
I'm wishing upon, you know, well, I need energy. I'll wish upon kobolds! And that's where it came from.
That's a fun idea. I mean, it certainly is. I mean, you know, one of my first teams that I ever did in this game was... A Nick Fury, Mr. Anger deck with the Avengers. I mean, it was Avengers. It was what it was. It was Black Widow. We had Hawkeye in there. We had the Hulk. We had, you know, I think I didn't use
Iron Man. Yeah, I think in our very first real game, That's what Katie and I played with. That's what Katie used on her team.
Yeah. And that's just awesome. I mean, and that's a good way to get into the game too. If you're introducing it to somebody else, you know, we talked many times about, we'll use characters that you know the person you're playing with likes. Well, same thing. You know, DC comes out. You know, you have a friend who's a huge fan of like old school Justice League International, like right early '90s Giffen DeMatteis, Bwahaha stuff. You know, well, you're going to go Booster Gold and Blue Beetle. They might not work perfectly together, but you're going to go Booster Gold and Blue Beetle. And if we ever see them, you know, you're going to throw in Fire and Ice, and you'll grab Batman, you'll grab a Green Lantern, you'll grab a Martian Manhunter and things like that. That's just how it works. And hopefully we see Fire and Ice and Rocket Red and Power Girl and all of them too in future DC sets. But, you know, you're going to put that stuff together because that's stuff that you're going to enjoy playing. You know, I don't play a lot of Hero Clicks at all, but I do have a little JLI team that I put together, and I don't think it's the most elegant team in the world, but I have Booster and Beetle and Manhunter and Fire and Ice and Rocket Red and all that kind of stuff. It's just fun. And that's just how you kind of like get the itch for a game in the first place.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes you got to take your favorite guys and make teams with them because that's just the way to have fun.
Well, sure, and we've had people talk about different ideas, like put together like a girl power team for their daughter to play with, and things like that, and other ideas. And I think a lot of these things become even easier the more and more cards that we get. You know, I mean, Elf Wizard, she's going straight on a girl power team if I'm putting one
literally
together.
Literally powering from the girl. She's powering your magic actions.
And Wonder Woman, her stats aren't amazing, but her abilities are pretty freaking sweet and things like that. So, I mean, all that stuff is out there. So, yeah. All right, so you've shared your Kobold team. An idea that I've had bouncing around since the set review is sort of like a necromancer team, right? So you have one character that's sort of magical in nature, and I don't know if I'm going with the elf wizard or one of the werewolves, or were-rats, rather. I don't know why there's no werewolf. One of the were-rats. But I like the were-rat that makes things, like, fueled for cheaper, but none of these things cost that much to field. In any case, using basic actions like Finger of Death, mostly because it's thematic, not because I love it, and Resurrection, of course. You could also grab Monster Reborn from Yu-Gi-Oh! And then...
Why no animate dead yet?
Do we have it? Oh, no. We don't have that yet, though, right? I was going to say, did
no,
I miss
no, it? I'm saying we don't have animate dead. That's another like iconic D&D spell that I feel like should be in there.
That's true. Well, this is set one. I mean, they've been
hopefully
pretty clear
next
about
time
that with
we'll
Yu-Gi-Oh!
See
with
it.
This series one. So yeah, but putting like that magic user together then with your zombie, your vampire, your mummy, and then also get in there that Summon Skull and Curse of Dragon from Yu-Gi-Oh! And actually, I'm really excited for when we get DC to have some options, because then we're going to have Deadman and we're going to have Solomon Grundy. And, you know, to put those all together and shake them around and see what comes out, a lot of those characters... Oh, and of course, the Draco
All I have to say is, if they make a ruling that, like, humanoid characters from other sets can be counted to have the equip icon... There is one thing I will want more than anything else, and that is some sort of magical leg armor. Because then Solomon Grundy can finally have pants too.
Well, that'd be a great thematic team to build, right? The Legion of Doom, Solomon Grundy, pants. Well, who was it that first in that? Is it Brainiac who first is bringing up that they want pants, and then at the end, Solomon Grundy wants pants too.
All I want is a decent pair of pants.
I just want some pants, a decent pair of pants. Yes. So you have to have Brainiac and Solomon Grundy, not just a straight up Legion of Doom team, because I don't think Lex was really on his side. He was more exasperated there. So the two of them battling for pants. I think it'd be fantastic. And again, that's not one of those like, hey, this is definitely a theme that you just think of, but and yet it is thematic.
Even if the theme is extremely silly.
extremely. But yeah, so that was one of the first things that popped up when we were going through the set review. Was like, ooh, I'd like to make a necromancer team. Because, okay, one of my favorite character class to play in Diablo 2 was the necromancer. It was so awesome. Like, it wasn't necessarily the most powerful class, and certainly Diablo 2 had, like, very specific archetypes that you had to make, and you were locked in on that. So if you screwed up your character, good luck.
They eventually added respecs, but...
I think they did, but they were a pain. Diablo 3, much better in that sense. But regardless, the Necromancer was awesome because you summon your skeletal warriors and then your skeletal mages. You throw in your golem, and then you start resurrecting a whole bunch of things. And it was even better if you started resurrecting a whole bunch of things in the cow level, because now you have these giant, scythe-wielding cows. And you could end up with an army of, 40 or so following you. And then there was a set armor that, if you had all four of them... made you look like a dark magician character from the game. It gave you a different skin, and that was just the coolest. Like, putting all of this stuff together, all these monsters that you're resurrecting, plus your skeletal mages and your skeletal warriors and your clay golem or blood golem or whatever you're using, all this junk was just so cool. And well, we have the tools here to recreate that feeling in this game. And it won't necessarily be like a world beater, but it's going to be a fun team to put together and play, because you're just going to have all these undead things coming at you.
And honestly, sometimes people come in expecting, I'm not saying necessarily, oh, you're going to want to bring these to, super duper serious tournaments. But sometimes if you're playing, if your casual gaming setup tends to go a little more towards the hardcore, sometimes bringing in something casual like that will shake it up, and they'll just be like, well, I was expecting bombs, and you brought this in, and I just couldn't deal with it.
Yeah, I mean, now the caveat with that is, you have to do something...
Yeah, you have to do something solid. You can't just be like... You can't necessarily do that and expect to win with, just... Yeah.
Any old thing. Yeah. I mean, the team still needs to be fast enough to deal with... some of the faster teams that are out there. It has to be able to disrupt that. One thing I know I haven't really had the time to do yet is just look through and say, okay, who are all of the Zhentarim? Who are all of the, I don't remember all of the Lord's Alliance? Who, what adventurers fit in that, and how do they work together? Do they work together? I don't know yet, because I haven't checked it out, but that's just another aspect of theme that we have available to us in the game now, thanks to all of the alignments offered by D&D, as well as the separate factions.
Unfortunately, I think there aren't really enough of each of the factions to really do a lot with right now, but hopefully with the next set, we'll... have a little bit better chance of having the Zhentarim agents go out and sow evil or whatever it is they do.
Well, I think there's enough for the core of a team, right? Because even when we're talking,
I think there's two or three of them.
X-Men team or an Avengers team in AVX, there was still like, okay, well, I actually have, three, four, maybe five X-Men, and then some peripheral characters for support. I'm going to have my Lord's Alliance plus some monsters or a unicorn or some junk. I don't know.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think there's two or three of each of them right now.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's fine. It's a start. And you can, you can throw some of the neutrals in with either side, and that wouldn't be, again, that wouldn't be breaking theme, because neutral characters just kind of go where they will as they feel they need to. So, yeah, but so many options with it now. Thematic teams that I'd like to see coming down the line from future sets, well, we would have a phenomenal, adventurer team. If this Lord of the Ring things happen, Lord of the Rings thing happens, you could go crazy with some elves, rather.
Filthy hobbits with the elf from and here. Some dwarves. And...
Well, sure, but we have, not just within the D&D set, but of course we have the mystical elf from Yu-Gi-Oh!, and things like that. Or how about a goblin team? Where are the goblins in D&D?
They do. I think kobolds have kind of taken over as the popcorn trash of choice.
But still, how about the goblins from Lord of the Rings and Green Goblin and the Goblin Attack Force? You know, like let's get some goblin power happening here. I mean, I want to see those sorts of things because they're different aspects of these like of this these character archetypes or like these fantasy race archetypes from all these different worlds, and that's pretty cool too.
Yeah.
I mean, if I could see Star Trek, I want to team up dwarves and Klingons, or like elves and Vulcans. Because that's let's be honest, that's really all they are.
The Shiva translation. I might argue dwarves and Klingons a little, but only a little.
No.
Only a little. No.
I mean, I guess you could say orcs, but I would disagree with that. Klingons have too much honor.
Yeah, it depends on who you talk to. They're not really motivated by riches. Depends on who you talk to about orcs.
Well, that's fair. That's fair. And I don't want to insult our half-orc fellow who's sitting in front of me in my stack of D&D cards, but... Yeah, so thematic teams. What's your favorite one that you've ever put together? What do you want to put together? What do you want to try now? Let us know. Mailbag@thereservepool.com. Of course, Dave, Evan, Chris, Randy at thereservepool.com. We have a lot of big stuff in the works here leading up to Nationals. I can't wait to show you what it all is going to be. We're really excited right now at the Reserve Pool. Just cool stuff going on. So,
if you could clip this into the earlier bit because I didn't get to... It just came to me. I would really love to see an actual Baldur's Gate team come together. Like, we have Minsk and Boo, but there's a lot of other characters or things we should suggest that I'd really like to see come out.
Well, I would say that would be really cool, but I kind of like that they steered away from named characters, because as somebody who has no real knowledge of Forgotten Realms, there's enough just fantasy meat in this set that I'm like, yep, I know what this is all about. You know what I mean? But, I mean, you know, I know who Drizzt is, but I don't really care that much. And I know that might be like geek sin to say, but that wasn't the D&D stuff that I read. But still, it could be a lot of
fun. No, I mean, I think it's good that they didn't put any, aside from the promo card, they didn't put any named characters in.
Yeah, and maybe we'll see it in the OP cards.
That would actually be great.
But I agree, that would be a pretty fun theme. Well, everybody, thank you so much for listening to us yet again this week. We're happy to be here. Please correspond, follow us on Twitter, YouTube, subscribe to this podcast. Do all of that great stuff because it helps us get the word out there. Tell your friends. You know, make them love Dice Masters. Make them do it. Force feed them dice. Don't do that. That would probably hurt.
Don't give up DM for Diane. No.
Yeah. All right. Well, again, thanks so much for spending time with us. This is Dave.
And this is Evan.
And this has been The Reserve Pool. Have a great week.
Have a good time.
Let the good times roll. Maybe you thought that there were going to be outtakes. Well, there aren't, not today. No, I just wanted to come in here and tell you what to expect from our Nationals coverage. Well, for one, our site launches just as we hit Nationals, so you can use our site and follow along with us on our forums and everything else. The second thing is that we're going to have several videos happening, pretty much whatever we're able to do, from a travel vlog for Randy and I heading to Baltimore to... you know, some gameplay, whatever we're able to do, some things in the room as far as our prep. We also would hope to have a review of DC because starter sets should be available to purchase. We'll have plenty of written content about our teams and the teams that we're seeing. We will also be recording a podcast from the event, at least from the hotel room. We want to talk to the folks who top eight. We obviously want to talk to the champion of the whole darn thing. We want to talk to just everybody. Whoever's playing Dice Masters there, we want to talk to them. We want to talk to you. So plenty of video and audio and written stuff will be happening from Nationals. So please check it out. Follow along with us. We want to hear from you. It's about the community, not about us. This is just a way that we get to have fun and interact with you. Talk to us. So... Nationals weekend. We are ready. I hope you are too.